Good evening. My name is Earl. I'm an alcoholic. I was thinking about what Nancy said, and I leaned over sitting next to my sponsor, and I said, we're, you know, thinking about mixing that vodka with that stuff to make it look like a, make it look like something else. And I said, a urine specimen looks like that too, but I'm not going to drink it. I know it's a little off color, but that's how I look at it now. But when it was alcohol, I would have drank anything. You know, I had my preferences, and I worked my way through them as fast as I could. I apologize for making it so close to being late. I appreciate being here very much. I got drunk the first time, you know, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. When I was 5 years old on a farm out by Merced, and it's sort of a funny story in hindsight, but at the time it wasn't so funny. I was five. I have an uncle that's 3 months older than I am, was also 5 years old, and I have an uncle that had just gotten home from the Second World War, and he found a bottle of Four Roses on the back porch at my parents' little farmhouse next to my grandparents' farmhouse, and he was the uncle that I turned out like until I quit drinking. And I used to think he had so much fun, you know, even as a kid. But he said, come on, let's go out to the pigs and watch the pigs get drunk. And I've even talked to him about this in sobriety. And he thought it was real funny, except that my mom tried to shoot him afterwards. But we went out there, and then between the two little kids, he said, here, why don't you have a drink? He challenged both of us. And both of us, of course, we knew that that was adult stuff at the time, but we didn't know what. And he says, here, I dare you to have one. I dare you to have one. Finally, one had a drink, and then the other had a drink, and we both just ended up, you know, we don't remember any of this. We were told about it later, but, you know, we were riding the old sow and slop and through a pigsty. That's bad stuff. And both of us ended up, saw that we got into my mom's, into our little farmhouse out there, and I was passed out in the hallway, and of course it regurgitated all over the place, and my uncle was laying backwards off my mom's and dad's bed, and was, you know, had gotten sick all over the place. My mom came in, took a look at us, so the story goes, and went out looking for her brother with a rifle. She did not find him, but I believe she would have killed him. The reason I tell this story is one of them is that my children think it's real funny. I have two younger children in sobriety, 11 and 13 now, and they think it's real funny. But the one thing that comes to my mind is, you know, I drank that time with the pigs, and I drank like a pig until I quit. You know, there was never enough. That old story that one is too many and a thousand is not enough was so appropriate for me. I was always so well-intentioned just to have a couple of drinks. I think I was like a lot of people. I wanted to look good. I wanted to feel good. And that put those either real good feelings at a better place or those real bad feelings in no place. And it's always fascinated me that that's the way I got started. Next time I drank the same way. I was 15 years old, and I was with the same two uncles. And he says, you guys want to go to the beach down at what used to be Tin Can Beach down in Southern California, between Huntington Beach and Seal Beach. And he said, we're going to go grunion hunting. And I knew he meant he was going to go drinking, and I hadn't had a drink since, you know, being 5 years old. And I could not wait to go. I was real active. Both the other uncle of my age and myself, we're both real active in sports and active in school and good students and everything else. But I'm telling you, that started us both on a tear where we, you know, we wrecked them, caused a lot of wreckage. And I'm adding him to it because we've talked a lot about it. That was when I started lying that night. I can't ever remember telling a lie until that point, even as a child. You know, I was taught to be straight up. And I sneaked in the window. I almost drowned out swimming in the surf, you know, so drunk that I couldn't walk, throwing up salt water and alcohol and all those things. I don't remember getting home, but after I got home, I remember I had to crawl in the window because I didn't dare knock on the door to get in the house and go in under those circumstances. And I crawled in through the window, and I had given some other excuse, but that was the lie. That was the start of the lies. And then the next morning, I got up real early and went and had a separate shower. My brother and I did sort of at our side of the house. It was a pretty small house, but still it was separate. And had gotten cleaned up and changed the linens on my bed and everything else, because I'd wet the bed as well as coming into bed wet. And the whole thing was miserable, and I could not wait to go out and try again. But the next time I was going to get it right. That only lasted for 30 years. Once in a while I got it right. And when I first came to this meeting, people used to joke about it that I was insane, because I learned how to like doing things like jumping out of airplanes, climbing mountains, diving off of high places, things I thought were fun and interesting. But to me, I was trying to conquer these fears. But I never did any of those straight. Even in the military, when I was jumping out of planes, I mean, hell, before we'd go, I'd be doing whatever I could to, you know, it was just the way I was. I thought I was an adult and I was supposed to be able to do those things. I went on through high school and I got good grades, all except one quarter. This same uncle came to me one time and said he was having some differences of opinion with one of his brothers, older brother, and that he was going to leave home and he wanted me to come with him. You know, I went, leave home? You got to be kidding me. You know, they take care of you here. And as I said, we were both getting good grades in school. Both of us played football. I played football, basketball, and baseball, and we were having a great time. You know, we both had cars, 16 years old. We both ended up selling our cars, catching the freights, and mine was on a whim to go with him because he was having some kind of problems. But to me, it was just, I found when I've done inventories doing the fourth step, I'd look back at this and it was, you know, change of places, just like changing drinks, just like going to another drug, like going to another sexual partner, whatever it was a change to change what was going on inside of me that I was incapable of facing. The one good thing that came out of that 2-week stint riding the freights in the last 5 days in jail in Evanston, Wyoming, was that I got A's on 3 papers that I wrote about it, you know, as I went on through high school and college. That's the only good thing came out of that, and it was an interesting experience. But even while we were doing that at that age, as we went through Las Vegas, we finagled to get alcohol to take back onto the freights with us. In Evanston, we finagled from some guys that were living in the freight yard to get alcohol for us. And, you know, I look at kids on the street now and have for years, and, you know, I had a hard time relating till I got sober. And then I can see how so easily I could have ended up there. The whole thing could have come to a halt much earlier. My life could have, actually. I ended up going in the military after high school. Went to college for a year, and I was getting good grades, but had no idea what I wanted to do. I thought it was pre-Vietnam, but we had special forces over there. Anyhow, I ended up in a interesting unit, and I got to go to Europe, of all things. Now, talk about someone that likes to drink and gets sent to Europe. Boy, I don't know who figures these things out in the military, but it's quite a trip. One thing I'd like to say is welcome to all the newcomers and you people in the VA. God bless you. Thanks for being here. And I are one. The difference is, at this moment, God's given me the grace just to stand here a few days longer is all. But today's the day I've got sober, just today. That military thing, while I was over there, I ended up getting the opportunity to play some sports. I love telling this story. I played football, basketball, baseball, and ran track, and those are all just gifts from God that I believe now. I used to think it was me. No. Those are gifts from God, and I was willing to work hard at it, but I almost outdrank every one of those things. You know, I was running track for the United States military track team, and the first big meet I ran in over in Europe, like 80,000 people down in Stuttgart, Germany. I mean, I'd never seen that many people except in the Coliseum to see the Rams play the 49ers, you know, when I was there. And I looked up and saw all those people, and what had happened, I had trained for 90 days straight. Boy, I said, man, I'm going to give it everything I've got, no drinking, no nothing. The night before, I came into contact with some British troops, and we started talking, and the next thing you know, I staggered out to the track after staying up all night with those people drinking. I made it 89 and a half days. I could not drink. You know, I never faced that. I never faced it till it came to a close at one point in my last day of drinking to this point in my life. I went out, I ran that in that track meet, and there were Olympic athletes from 10 countries running in that thing. And it was, man, I'm going like, what? Actually, I didn't think I was good enough to be there, I think is what it came down to. And in writing about it like I would on the fourth step looking at issues in my life today, that's exactly what it was. I didn't think I was good enough to be there. And so I sabotaged myself. And it turned out that was a pattern the rest of my life. I went out, I ran that track meet, I ran, came in third. I ran the 10th fastest time of all time at that point in life in the 400 meter intermediate hurdles, and then puked from here to Munich. And I've got to show you this physically. You know, the person that comes in first, somebody will run up and grab them and take them over, and then second and third. Well, the person who came up to grab me for third place happened to be a woman, and that was something relatively new at the time. And the important thing here is I didn't try and make a move on her. But as she comes up and grabs me, it's when I turn this way to start to regurgitate, and she's backing up like this, and I'm going, and 80,000 people are going, ooh, like this, and I thought I was cool. I mean, I was embarrassed about that, but, you know, wiped my mouth off, and I still thought I was cool, you know, I thought everything was all right. I had no concept at all that had anything to do with alcohol. Through the games and sports that I played in the military, I was offered college scholarships. I turned down two of them out of fear that I wasn't good enough. And that's basically what it came down to. And when I look at that fear, to say fear to people, I mean, when you've been shot at, and I explained to my brother in sobriety as we were walking together about fear in my life, he says, oh crap, he says, I know you're not afraid. He says, I've been with you when you've been shot at, there's all kinds of fighting things going on. He said, I've never seen you flinch. And I said, there are different kinds of fear. And I said, we all have a little fear of dying, and we all have some fear of being maimed or injured. But I said, the one that beat me to death my whole life was the fear of looking bad. You know, that it wasn't, no matter what, get straight A's, and I wasn't good enough. I don't, for me, not for you, for me it wasn't good enough. God, sobriety, and Alcoholics Anonymous, not necessarily in that order, have allowed me to modify that so I can be comfortable with myself now. I still went back and went to college in girl that I had known, a friend's younger sister. She and I became intimate while I was in college, home, and she got pregnant, and that's when I started turning down, you know, college scholarships. She didn't want to leave, and I just didn't. Part of it was I thought it was the right thing to do to get married, and it was, but not with the motives that I had in mind. And my own fear of trying to go to higher levels. The good thing out of that is that I have a wonderful 35-year-old son now who's 12 and a half years sober, and a good father, and an upstanding member of our community. And the lady's my friend, and that didn't come easily. I moved on through my life, and I walked out of their life. I ended up with an opportunity to try out for a minor pro football team in the Continental League down in Southern California, and my young son was 2 years old. His mother and I, we had not been together. We'd see each other periodically, and I'd see him. He was just turned 2 years old, and that was the last time I saw him for almost 17 years. And I can remember looking at him as I was running off the field and him going, "That's Daddy, that's Daddy." And I went out and started drinking that night. An opportunity came up to take a trip or not take a trip, and I took a trip. And that's, and looking back, I mentioned doing this inventory in a four-step. With that, I've been able to look at the patterns. I mean, and I did a lot of fun, quote-unquote, fun things in life that a lot of people would like to do. You know, go race big sailboat races, or, you know, get to go somewhere this side of the world for lunch and over there for breakfast the next day. And, you know, what to me was fun, and all I was doing was hiding the person that I was in here with alcohol, mainly with alcohol, but that fixed with people as well. I ended up going through four marriages while I was out there drinking and using. And the same patterns kept happening over and over again. I did not see them. I did not. The insanity of alcohol, when they say continually doing the same thing over again and expecting a different result, I did not know that information till I came in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. While I was out there, I drank. I used every drug possible. I used every body possible. And I remarried for the fifth time in 1985. In early 1986, April of 86, we had a young, beautiful daughter, Sierra Sky. And I thought about this. I had a flash of this yesterday. I was driving down Palm Avenue, and some people I used to know while I was drinking and using and stuff lived in a home there. And I could see, I had a flash of my daughter's little infant face and walking into their home after she was born with two bottles of Irish whiskey. And I know I drank one. And that was the first day she was born. And I look back at that and I go, God, how unfair is that, you know? No way for me to act. I didn't look at it that way at the time. My drinking came to halt July 14th, 1986. I looked up after 3 days of drinking and drugging, just disappearing away from home. Nothing heavy going on, nothing great going on, nothing bad going on. We didn't argue, and I was coming back down the hill from the mountains where I'd been drinking and I have to say drugging because that was a part of it, but I never did any of those unless I was drinking. And I came down the hill, and as I was coming down, I had this flash of myself dying in the gutter, just totally no physical controls at all. And it startled me. And I was still, you know, I was drunk. And then I got this flash for me, which is a spiritual experience in my life because I never had one before that I know of. And where I saw that the only time those bad things happened in my life, the two things were there were Earl and alcohol. And I got that flash, and I can remember saying out loud, well, I guess that's it. Because I knew alcohol was over. I've known people that killed themselves because they couldn't control it. They didn't believe they could, and they didn't think there was a way out. I don't want to do that. My past, I was the person who'd try and kill somebody else. You know, I'd take it out at somebody else, my lack of my own control and anger. My fear of lack of control would turn into anger towards someone else. I went home. My wife was laying on the couch, just breastfed the baby and Sierra, and had the infant laying between her breasts, and I walked in the front door. You know, I can imagine I was reeking of alcohol and just smelled terrible, no doubt. But I walked in and she said, how are you doing? I'll never forget these words either. She said, how are you doing? And I said, not so good. And I told her, I said, but I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm not going to tell you I'm sorry. I said, those words are burnout. But I'm going to tell you that I'm willing to do what's necessary not to act like this again. And she said, the number is on the wall next to the phone in the kitchen. She had been going to Al-Anon for about 8 months. And she had the number for the Alcoholism Council. And that number was there. And I'm telling you, having that ball put back in my court was one of the biggest gulps of my life. You're like, oh. You know? It was bad. I walked over to the phone, I walked away from the phone, I walked over to the phone, I walked back out to my vehicle, got a beer out of the cooler, come walking back in, popped the beer, stood in the kitchen like this, looking out through the serving area, out to where my wife was laying out there. She didn't pay any attention to me. And let me stew in my own juices. And eventually I got on the phone and got one of those darn answering machines. You know, of course it was like 9 o'clock on Sunday night. And so that meant I had to get up the next morning and start making that call again. I made the call. They put me in touch with the Alcoholism Council and Dean Duncan, bless his soul. But I got to tell you, I think he sent me to the Rolls Royce of recovery centers, but being Beacon House. And I say that because he asked me, he says, Earl, do you play golf? Do you play tennis? Do you play horseshoes? Do you play volleyball? Do you... And I said, yes. He said, take all those things with you. He said, all that stuff's right there. I thought I had to fix. They fixed me. I got over there, and it turns out one of the counselor who was checking me in, a male about my age, I'm looking at him even in a stupor like this. He looks familiar. And it turns out we used to drink and drug years back in the same group of people. And he directed me to... Excuse me. How late does this go? I'll get sober. Okay, cool. I'm sober anyhow. I'm on my way. Because sobriety is a lot more exciting than the rest. It was exciting at the time, but now this is it. As I'm trying to fill out these papers, and I mean, I couldn't write. I was just sharing information. My wife would write it down. I was so shaky. In fact, I was so shaky to the point earlier that day after I talked to Mr. Duncan at the Alcoholism Council. We went to get something to eat, and I wanted iced tea with my meal. And it was going to be the first meal I'd eaten in like 3.5 days, 4 days. My wife got up to go to the ladies' room. I'm sitting there, my young infant in the car seat across from me, sitting there at the seat, and I had to bring the iced tea, and I took some of those packets of sugar to open them up. And I was shaking so badly, the sugar went all over the table, you know. And so I'm trying to figure out, how do I do this and not look bad, right? And all these people are watching, like, whoa, St. Vitus dance or something, you know. I look like a new ride at Disneyland, you know. I stuck the spoon in there. Hell, I didn't have to turn that dude like this. It just vibrated it, you know, and there was iced tea all over the place. I finally put a death grip on it and stuck my face on it and just tipped it up. It was a horrendous feeling, and I look back at that, and I had been doing that off and on for years, and I'd never paid any attention to it. I just said, oh, that's something that started when I was 5. And it did. I was directed to Beacon House, and it's, you know, it's a short drive to Monterey. To go over there and go swimming, or to go over and go have dinner, or to go play golf, I can be over there in 3 hours easy and make a couple of pit stops and drive the speed limit. But that drive took about 6 hours. I was stopping at every place possible. It was just a long, miserable, that put that thing off kind of thing. As I was checking in, two men came up behind me at the entrance to the office where I was signing in at Beacon House Recovery Home, and saved my life, got me started in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what they taught, God and Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, that's my kind of program now. He said, your wife can fill out the rest of these. Just put your X right here. He showed me these places to put an X because I couldn't even sign my name. It just looked like hieroglyphics. And he and my wife were the witnesses. And I went to a meeting with these two men. Both of them are dead now from alcoholism. They had to have one more drink. And one more turned into one too many. So I know I was gifted. The one thing I heard at that first meeting, God, I didn't want to be an alcoholic. Hell, that was too much fun most of the time out there, you know. And I didn't associate all the wreckage I was causing with myself and alcohol. I went to that meeting and I heard people. What I heard more than anything else, which I'm so grateful for, was that they were on a spiritual journey. They felt great, and they were in the solution, not in the problem. I was always trying to cover tracks, and covering up the problem end up in another hole, you know, by sabotaging myself. And a lot of great things happened. I mean, business-wise, life-wise, some wonderful things and some occurred in my life. Just through, really, I look back now as gifts from God and some of the natural talents He had given me. And I would end up sabotaging those things somewhere down the road. And alcohol was always what I needed more than anything else. It became more important than any job, any wife, any child, any family member or friend I ever had until I quit drinking. Within the first week, we'd go to at least 2 meetings a day over there. And, you know, instantly I was feeling better because I felt like I was relating to what these people were talking about, being in the solution. I had no concept what the steps were, although by the second night I had read most of the book. The first night I was directed to read chapter 3 so that I could relate to what a fool I was in trying to change all those things and not get anything to work. As I mentioned, you know, changing from Nancy, your vodka, and especially the non-alcoholic beer. Ooh. I could relate to that, but as I started seeing how other people had been able to change their lives. And the one thing that kept grasping me was that it is a spiritual journey, and the mention of God just about killed me because I felt so hypocritical from my denial that there was God of any sort. You may choose whomever you wish or whatever you wish to call God, but there was nothing. I was it. I was it. This man who was my counselor there told me, he said, Earl, right away in the first couple of days, he said, you need to find a higher power. And he says, I know you've always thought you were it, but you need to find another one. He says, what I remember is you really love nature. And he said, choose nature if you can't choose God or whatever else. So I would go out. I mean, it's a, such a beautiful place over there at the bay, and there's a big clump of 5 redwood trees right outside this old Edwardian house. And I would go stand in that clump of trees and pray each morning. I mean, I've been getting up real early since I was a child, and I still wake up, but sometimes I go back to sleep now, not pass out. I would go out there, and I could not help but cry when I would pray. And it's that I felt so hypocritical. It would just eat me alive. Every meeting, you know, those 2 meetings a day that I was doing with this group, we'd say the Serenity Prayer at the beginning of the meeting and the Lord's Prayer at the end. And here I thought I was, you know, I was tough. I wanted to be cool and tough and never be seen crying. Both times, each meeting, at the beginning, at the end, I'd be standing there and tears would just be streaming down my cheeks. And it took to about 6 months, and all of a sudden I was free. But I knew I wasn't drinking, and I knew I felt the best inside I had ever felt in my whole life. And all I'd been doing is asking, please help me not to drink, help me to do thy will, not my will, I was told to ask for. And that was a wonderful feeling. By that time, I was already in the middle of the steps. They had a great first sponsor, Hal W., and emphatic about working the steps. I cannot be more emphatic than to say it saved my life. What happened in working the steps, of course, admitted I was powerless over alcohol. I didn't have any problems with that. I was finally able to see that after that spiritual revelation that Earl and alcohol, that's the only time I ever had any problems. And having been told that I was crazy since I was a child, I still to this day, every morning, I ask to be brought to sanity. Not return to sanity, because I don't know that I've ever been there. I still get such fun, wild thoughts that who knows? The difference is I don't act on them now. That's the difference. You know, when I see some beautiful women and I don't just take my clothes off and go running over and hug them. Old bull, young bull theory. Thanks, I need that. Are you sure this is safe? Thank you. It better be water. Better not be that urine specimen. At about 6 months, when the crying stopped when I was praying, I was able to do an honest third step. I was able to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him or her. It's the most wonderful thing that ever happened in my life. And boy, I love my children, but that's the most wonderful thing. It allows me to share with them. One of the most difficult things for me to do, being so self-centered, egotistical, big shotism, God, everything, a thief, a liar, a cheat, all those things. Doing a 4-step allowed me to look at myself, and you know, after I put down the first name of a woman that I had been involved with, all I had to do was change the names. I offended them all the same way. And they affected me the same way, because it was part of, for me, part of the fix. I was not there for the good that I could do for another human being. I was there explicitly for what could be done for me. And that's not a relationship for me. But seeing those patterns in a fourth step, it felt terrible to look at myself. I mean, I still have that fourth step. I want to tell you the story real quick. No, I'll pass on that. I dug that out recently. My young son, who's 11, said, "Dad, do you have a blank piece of notebook paper?" I said, "Sure, just a minute." And I went over and I've got this red notebook binder and I keep that thing and I read through it once in a while. And it still, you know, it reminds me of who I am very heavily. Anyhow, I got out this piece of notebook paper and I looked at that. And he asked me, he said, "What's that?" And I told him what it was as part of Alcoholics Anonymous, working the steps and trying to see who you are, clear up the wreckage of your past, and move forward with a higher power so that you can become spiritually fit to be to your fellow man and to God. And I told them those things, and they hear me talk about AA, and they definitely hear me, we pray at meals and before we go to bed and stuff together. And we don't go to church. You know, I tell people I go to the church of golf. Because that's normally where I am on Sunday mornings if I can be. Anyhow, I shared with him my fifth step about his mother. And he looked at me and he goes, "I don't see you act like that." And, you know, I was able to explain to him when I acted like that was before I quit drinking and before I started having God as my higher power. You know, clear up the wreckage of my past and move on. And I've made my amends there, so it was real. I mean, I ended up telling him those things and showing him that, and I was crying. You know, and he passed me on the back, and he goes, "It's okay, Dad. I love you. I love you." But, you know, I'm not afraid to show him that. I mean, it wasn't no heinous crimes, but except of the heart and the spirit. In doing the fifth step, shared with God, myself, and another human being, the ill-gotten person I had become with alcohol, allowed me for the pretty early on was that I was married four times at that time. I was so embarrassed by that. That just ate me alive. But I would not tell a soul that. And it still was embarrassing. But, you know, I went through that whole fifth step, and then he said, "Is there anything else?" Oh, God. Why do they always have to know, you know? But I told him that, and he just started laughing. You know, he thought that was hilarious, that that's what it was. They didn't tell him about killing somebody or something, or raping the pig. Who knows? That was probably a matter of opinion, I guess. Sixth step, becoming willing to share that with God. Turn that over to get rid of it. And then going through the seventh step and asking to have those defects of character. I mean, I felt terrible, but the one thing that kept coming up all the time for me, the positive aspect of this, as working through these steps and revealing myself, was that I knew I was in the solution. None of it came easy, but I knew I was going forward. I was going forward in my growth emotionally and spiritually that had stagnated since I was a young child. Because I started hiding everything that was going on within me. I would never tell you the truth. I wouldn't, when I say that, about what was going on with me. I mean, if you ask me, did you put the flag up today? Yes, sir, I did. But if you ask me if I put the right flag up, you know, I don't know. But that all had to do with what was going on within me, about how I really felt and how I wanted to look on the outside. This gave me the opportunity, through my higher power, having said, God, my will and my life are yours, to share with that other human being, and now it's not a big deal. I can discuss, I'm having the pits of a day, it isn't, oh man, everything is great. You know, of course, I got holes in my shoes, and the kids didn't eat today. I would have hidden that in the past because I had to look good. This has allowed me to be honest with what is going on in my life. Not with everybody. Everybody doesn't understand what we're talking about. We talk about having one too damn many drinks and that not being able to stop. You know, well, why did you stop? Well, because the plane didn't go past Miami. You know, and they ran out of alcohol there. I love the 10th and 11th steps. I made amends. There are two major amends that have not been made. One of them, I'm working out something in my head, and I'm going to approach my sponsor about it here real soon. But I bought a motorcycle that I didn't pay all for all of it, and the guy ended up got killed in the military. And so I've got to do something about that one, but I wrote it up, and I'm more than willing to do whatever's necessary. And the other one is I'm still paying the IRS from a million years ago. I think my first bill from them had dinosaur poop on it. It's ugly. Anyhow, I'm still bartering with them and still paying. But other than that, those ex-wives, I've made amends. I mean, there are people I put in the hospital for a year in my fighting, doing those kinds of things. And I've made amends the best I can. But I've been willing to do what was necessary to clean up the wreckage of my past and to not act like that again. When the summer prior to, and I want to discuss the 12 step here, the 12 step, a lot of people, that's a three-part step. Three parts. And having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and practice these principles in all our affairs. Sometimes it's a tough line to walk. Once in a while, the crazy person in there says, ah, hell, let's just slide over the fence a little bit. I still don't want to be a little bit pregnant. You know, I never wanted to be a little bit drunk. I mean, I wanted it all. I play golf the same way. There are no half measures. It's attack the hole. You know, and that's, people laugh at me going, why? Why do you always do that? This is off color, but I'm going to say it. I said, did you ever get half a piece of sex? And these people all looked and said, what? And the crowd grew instantly when I said that. And I said, well, I never did. Either you get it or you don't. And as insane as that is, and I think that's an insane thought, but it's a fun thought for me. It reminds me of how crazy I was and how crazy I still can be, and yet how comfortable I can be with that now. My oldest son, the summer of 1986, he's 35 now, before I got sober in June, before I got sober in July, I was teaching him rock climbing in Yosemite on drugs and alcohol. A year afterwards, in June, he got sober. June of 87, he got sober. And when he takes a birthday chip, I love what he says. He says, I want to call on the guy who shows me how it works every day. I was sitting there, I had no idea who the hell he was talking about. I really didn't. I was just sitting there in awe of what was going on. I had abandoned him at 2 years old. Didn't see him again until he was almost 19. And then here he was getting sober along with me. He said, and if that asshole can get sober, anybody can. I don't curse very often, but that's honorable. You know, it makes me feel good that he would even think that, because it's the truth. And those are mild words. He's raising a family. I just found out Wednesday that I'm going to be a grandfather again. Fourth one's on the way. They're being raised in sobriety, my grandchildren in sobriety and in the hands of their higher power, God. My two younger children are raised, I try and raise them by the tenets of this program, because I found that's what works best in my life. I mean, not only the Ten Commandments, but, and I don't, as I said, I don't go to church. I go to weddings and funerals. Not my weddings. I don't go to those anymore. To this point. But I think that's wonderful. That's where he raises his children. But these two young children, I look at them, and there are times I look at them, and I just start crying to think of what a part of their life I am now and how I take part in their life. And I know that I share a lot in meetings about my children, because that's what I relate to. And I see my own growth as a child, and I see their growth. And we can't change what happened, but I'd give my damn kingdom to be one of them. And you know, and have, and to be as open, and the opportunity to be as open, and to share. We were at dinner tonight, and we were, three of us were there, and we were talking about, I was joking with one of the men about, here, it was real crowded waiting to get into the restaurant, and I said, here, I'll just sit on your lap. You know, and he, whoa. Jokingly, he goes, whoa, I don't know about that. And how open I am about that kind of thing. In the past, that would have bothered the hell out of me. And now I'm just so open, and I just pretty much love everybody. It's wild. In a kind-hearted way. But to see these children, my oldest son, I was sharing with them about how to walk up to him, and he doesn't care, I don't care who's there, whatever, and he's a healthy young guy, and he walks up, and we just put our arms around each other and kiss each other right in the face, and that's how we feel, and how fortunate I feel to be that open. And these children are the same way, and that's what a lady friend is with, and she sees my children at school, and we're discussing how some children, they say, Mom, please don't come in the class, or don't come near the class, or Dad, please don't do that. My children take me and drag me, you know, wherever they are, and they see me, and they run up and kiss me and hug me, and it just overwhelms me, because I know that if I was drinking, I probably wouldn't have anything to do with their life. I'd have just been a sperm donor, you know? And it's a gift for me, and I really believe that I'm in God's grace through the gifts of this program, learning how to work the steps and the wonderful people here who keep showing me how this program works, that I'm able to live with these people and share with them that there's another way to live in our lives. They may attack alcohol someday and it may attack them. And yet they'll remember that there's another way. There's another way. My will and my life are yours to do with as you please. Thank you, God. Thank you all for being here. Good night.